Welcome to Game Misconduct. I'm CT here with Dory.
Hello.
Don't forget to follow us on social media, actually Facebook and Twitter, really, at Game Miz with a Z Conduct. We still haven't figured out our Instagram password.
Nope.
Maybe by the end of the season we will have figured that out. But
probably not.
We're going to jump right in with our guest this week because he's probably my favorite of all time, maybe? We are speaking with Dave Mishkin, play-by-play extraordinaire for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Dave, please remind everybody, not like they don't know already, but where they can find you on the air and any writings you may do online or your social media handles.
Well, first of all, thanks. You don't need to butter me up with flattery. I would have come on your show without it.
It's the truth.
I appreciate the kind words. The Twitter handle is really original, at Dave Mishkin. And I link everything I write for the Lightning's website through that Twitter handle. But most people who know where to find me on Twitter are already well informed on the Lightning website, I think.
Right.
So it's probably redundant. They're getting what I'm writing anyway. And that's basically all you're getting from me on Twitter. I'm not, you know, posting about what I ate for breakfast or anything like that. So there are probably much more interesting people to follow, but that is how you can find me. And as far as our radio network, obviously, we're on Lightning Power Play, which is airing your show, among other things. And you can find us through the NHL app. But if you're going to go the old terrestrial radio route, it's 970 WFLA in the Tampa area.
Cool, which I listen to quite frequently.
And also, also, Dave, I have to tell people that your Mishkin's musings are so,
so good.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, big fan of those.
I like writing, and the Lightning, I think, do a nice job organizationally of trying to put people in positions where they can succeed. I think that's true on the ice, certainly.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I went to Bill Wickett, who's you know, Senior VP of Communications. I don't know, it must have been 8-9 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And I'd always written a column, which is that musings column. It's kind of like when the spirit moved me, I would write, but it was kind of intermittent.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, what do you think about me kind of doing a view from the booth right after the game? And he said, go for it. And so I have the musings column, but as I said, probably about 7-8 years ago, I started writing what we call Extra Shift, which is kind of a recap of the game. But like Brian Burns does his own recap of the game. He's the team's beat writer. And he's more like a reporter,
right,
if you will. Like he's kind of pulling out the significant elements in the game, which I guess I am too, but mine is much more kind of colored with opinion.
Yeah. More of an op-ed.
Which I'm giving on the air anyway.
Right.
So I'm
right.
basically regurgitating what I've just said.
Yeah.
And it probably takes me far less time to write than Burnsy. You know, like we've compared notes, you know, he's gotta get quotes and you know, go down to the locker room and then like get it recorded and then, you know, type out the quotes. I'm just basically stream of consciousness writing.
Right.
But I enjoy it and you know, thanks for the comments. So, you know, I try and share, I guess, if that's the right word, how I see the game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true with the column as well. Which
I will say that, you know, because I'm a student of the game, I'm always learning, you know, new things and how to look at the game and everything. So I'll always read them after a game to kind of, after I watch a game to kind of, oh, I do remember that, or I remember seeing that, or I don't remember seeing that. So it kind of helps me see a full picture after I'm, because the game is so fast. You're like, oh, was that something I should be paying attention to? And a lot of times those are things that you write about. So I learn a lot from your column, for sure.
Well, and certainly, you know, opinions are subjective, and not everybody sees the game exactly the same way. And what I feel might be important enough for me to bring up in a post game piece, other people may disagree, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But you know, that's kind of what I've been tasked to do.
Yeah.
So I try and stay true to that, and I kind of find that, however I'm painting the picture, it's in the ballpark with what I'm hearing from all the other sources.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's Cooper's post game or Brian Burns's, you know, piece afterward, they were kind of hitting the same notes,
right,
even though we may be playing different instruments, if that's the right analogy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It kind of puts a nice little bow on everything. And it's kind of required reading for us as we prep for our show. So thank you for helping us prep for our show.
My pleasure.
And remember, Dave, it's your column, not theirs. So you can write about whatever you want to write about. very early on the season, we had on Kaylee Chelios, who's had an expanded role over her time being here. And she had nothing but incredibly glowing things to say about being able to work with you. Do you return the...
Oh, stop. What are your thoughts on getting to work with Kaylee and kind of like maybe mentoring her a little bit, you know, because she is just cutting her teeth on that part of the position. But I love when you're with Esposito, but I also really enjoy your chemistry with Kaylee.
Well, thanks. First of all, you know, having a second voice on the broadcast enhances the broadcast. And I'm really thankful to have had the opportunity to have somebody with me on the road, because up until last year, mm-hmm. it was solo Mio for me on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And with Kaylee being grounded now, she's, you know, expecting her first child, her and Danny are having a baby girl in April. You know, her doctor said, well, no more flying.
Yeah.
So from here on out in the regular season anyway, I'm back to calling the games alone, which is, you know, I can do it. But I think that, you know, invariably the stuff that I miss,
right?
Like I'm on the puck. I'm missing stuff away from the puck.
Mm-hmm.
And having a second person in the booth really adds to kind of fill out the picture,
yeah.
and give it a more complete picture. Having said all of that, it has been a huge joy and pleasure to work with Kaylee. I think that, and I've answered this question about kind of, you know, well, what is she bringing to the broadcast in some articles that have been written about her. And I think that to be a solid analyst, mm-hmm. which is different than being a reporter. Like, her role as a web reporter is different.
Right.
It overlaps, but it is different than doing the analysis on broadcast. And one of the parts where it overlaps is one of the things that I think is important, which is to have a knowledge of the team and a background, and to have knowledge of the background of the team and the players.
Mm-hmm.
And so she brought that to the booth day one,
right,
based on her work as a web reporter, because she's been the web reporter since 2016-17.
Mm-hmm.
So she'd had a couple of years interviewing players, and, you know, she'd lived through every game and understood kind of the backstory for both the team and the players as a point of reference, which is important.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one. Two, you need to be able to break down a play when it happens to explain kind of what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it was a good pinch by the defenseman, or how did this 2-on-1 occur? Like, who made the mistake there? And it was clear early on that she was able to pinpoint that, whether that's due to, you know, growing up in a hockey family,
right.
Her dad, obviously, Hall of Fame player, both her brothers, you know, played hockey. In fact, Jake still is playing in China in the KHL. And we had done a game, a couple of games actually, in Fort Myers, Estero, for that prospect tournament in the summer or late summer of 2018, leading into training camp. And I typically have not done those, but that was because it was close. They had me and Brian Engblom and Kaylee go down to do the two games the Lightning were playing, Lightning prospects. And it was the first time I'd really worked with her in that capacity, and I was struck that she was able to break down plays. And it's not easy because, you know, you have three in the booth.
Right.
She's looking for an opportunity to kind of get her two cents in. So there's a little bit of a tap dance there, you know, that is required when you have three in the booth. But she was able to do it. So kind of on the strength of her work there, when we had our preseason meeting for the 18-19 season, and we had some preseason games coming, and obviously I was doing the preseason games on the road by myself, I floated the idea of having Kaylee do one of the games. Mm-hmm. That was what I suggested. But again, Bill Wickett kind of took the ball and ran with it and said, okay, not only are we going to have her do one, let's have her do all three preseason games. And on the strength of her work in the preseason, it then, and then, you know, got extended into the regular season. And this year she did, up until the point that she couldn't travel anymore, every road game. So the second part, which is kind of looking at a play and breaking it down, she had that.
That's awesome.
So she had the knowledge of the team and the players, and she was able to break down plays. The third part is the hardest part. And it's probably the part in which, like, we talk a lot off air, and I didn't hear her interview with you, but if she said that, you know, I've been a mentor to her, I don't know that I would use that word, but I'm helping her work through kind of this third part. And the third part is figuring out kind of in broad strokes which way the wind is blowing in a game.
Mm.
And sometimes the wind blows in both directions,
right,
in the course of a game or in the course of a period, and why it's happening. So, like, if the Lightning are dominating a game and they're out shooting a team 40-17, it's pretty clear that the wind is blowing in one direction or in the other direction. But most games are not like that. And even if the game is like that, well, why? Like, what are they doing to give themselves this huge advantage? What is the other team doing? Or what are they not doing?
Mm-hmm.
But more common is they're like ebbs and flows within game.
Yeah.
And being able to kind of sense that, which is different than breaking down a play. Like, a play is a moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
But this is more kind of like the trajectory of a game. And that's not easy.
No.
It's not easy to kind of see and digest it and then, like, regurgitate it in a coherent fashion. And I think that's really the area where – and it is one of those things where the more you do it, the better you get at it. So the fact that she's had these reps has really helped her. And I'm not saying that she started at zero. I'm just saying, like, this is a hard aspect of the job, which is why, like – when you see analysts around the NHL, a lot of them have spent their whole lives in hockey, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Players, you know, analysts, they've been doing it a long time, and it's almost like speaking a foreign language.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're just fluent in it. And I think that this is a work in progress for all of us. Like, you know, I do it too, where I'm thinking about, like, and this kind of helps me with this extra shift column too. Like, the fact that I'm writing this forces me to think about kind of the narrative within a game. And I think she's done a fantastic job in terms of kind of understanding how to express that. Because even if she instinctively knew what was happening, to be able to explain it, which is the role of an analyst, is really the challenge. And to do it in a succinct, coherent way takes practice and reps. And so I'm really happy that, you know, she's getting those reps, and she's such a quick learner and such an eager learner too, that it's worked really well. I think she's grown a lot even just in the 2 years that she's been doing the games. But just to be clear, it's not like she was starting at zero, right?
Yeah, no,
like,
she had background.
Starting way ahead of the game.
Right.
And has worked very, very hard at her craft.
Well, it's been a joy to listen to, for sure. We are speaking with Dave Mishkin right now on Game Misconduct.
So let's talk to you about the huge trade made last week for Blake Coleman with the Devils. I was a little shocked when the news came through. What does he bring to the team? And were you surprised by the trade at all?
Honestly, I was surprised, but I never really had a sense of what the Lightning were going to do, if anything.
Well,
and last year, you know, they made the trade cuckoo for Ruda. I can't even remember if that was right at the deadline or a little before, but that was really the only move that they made. And of course, Ruda has turned into, you know, a steady member of their top six. He's currently hurt, but it's turned into a pretty good trade for the Lightning.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know what to expect, and something that involves, you know, a pick and a prospect leaving the organization is not something that you can predict necessarily.
Exactly.
Having said that, you know, Blake Coleman, the word that I keep hearing about him, which is being used by a lot of the people who covered him in New Jersey, but also kind of national writers who are aware, and Julian Breezebaugh and John Cooper use this word too, is relentless. Like, he plays with a relentlessness that is very well suited to not only how the Lightning want to play, but also the way you need to play in the playoffs. So that relentlessness makes him very hard to play against. But that's not it. I mean, the guy has scored 21 goals this year,
right,
on a team that has struggled in the standings and is in the bottom third in offense with basically zero power play time. So that tells you that not only does he play with like a Yanni Gourde type relentlessness, if that's a good comparison, but he is also, and like Yanni has scored 20 goals in a season twice, but he is also capable of producing offensively. So he can be used in a variety of different ways, whether you want to use him, you know, in a bottom six capacity or in a top six capacity. He's an excellent penalty killer, and he has scored some shorthanded goals this year. So that part of it, I think they really like. They really like a guy who, you know, the term that I think Julian used was, he's like the Energizer Bunny. So you need players like that. He's a good player who gives you an honest effort every shift and will be really hard to play against and can contribute offensively and is a good penalty killer. So you put all of that together, and he's definitely going to be a very solid addition to what is already a very solid roster. The other part of this was that he has another year on the deal. So, and it's a very cap-friendly deal. He's making $1.8 million in his current contract. So basically, this year is not going to be significant, and the Lightning have cap room to fit him this year. Mm-hmm. But next year, as they face, the Lightning face a cap crunch with some key restricted free agents they need to sign to get Coleman in the mix at a very cap-friendly number, I think was an incentive. And probably the last part was, as much as, you know, the Lightning have been hesitant to trade first-round picks, now they've traded players who have been first-round picks. I think Joe Smith had the note that now 9 of the last 11 first-round picks for the Lightning have been dealt from the organization, but you're getting value in return. They have not often traded the first-round pick before they actually make the pick, but they have 2 first-round picks, presuming Vancouver makes the playoffs this year.
Right.
So they had another first-round pick in their back pocket, which probably helps soften the blow of giving up a first to get Coleman. So I don't know that, going back to the beginning part of my answer, I don't know that you can predict a significant trade like this. So I think there's always a little bit of surprise when you hear about it. And I think for a lot of Lightning fans, the initial reaction was that this was a high price to pay. Mm-hmm. And you do tend to overpay at the trade deadline. But Julian Breezebaugh really coveted this player, a player who can help the Lightning not only this year but next year, who will work in their big picture cap situation. And they had the assets to give. Yeah, they still have a first-round pick. And I think all of that added up to what the Lightning hope is going to be a really successful addition to their team, not only this year but next year.
Yeah, when I saw it happen, go down, I saw a lot of people on social media saying, like, oh, the Lightning really gave up a lot. And I just never thought it was giving. I feel like sometimes you're getting a proven player where you know what you're getting. You know what he brings to the table. Obviously, there's a little bit already chemistry there he has with Pat Maroon, who played with him in Jersey as well. But he's, you know, has a lot of experience. Seems, by everything I read, to be like a leader type of guy for a young prospect who you really don't know. I hate saying it, but it's kind of a crapshoot. You know, it can go either the Sergachev way, which worked out for the Lightning, or, you know, it goes the other way, you know, that we hear, unfortunately, too many times. So I never thought it was that much either, but I did totally forget that they had 2 draft picks in the first round this year, given Vancouver. Which, by all likelihood.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break and come back on Game Misconduct with more from our guest, Dave Mishkin. Stick around. Welcome back to Game Misconduct. We are going to jump right back in with our guest, Dave Mishkin.
Yeah, so I want to talk to you about Andre Vasilevsky, who's leading the league at the time that we're talking to you, again in wins. because that's what he does. But what I want to know, we all know how great he is. He's fantastic. Probably will be a Vezina Trophy finalist again. But where do you see, where does he stack up in your mind against all-time Lightning goalies?
That's a tough one. I mean, and he's got a long way to go still in his career. So assuming that his trajectory stays where it is, I mean, he's going to finish with every goaltending record that exists. In fact, you know, he's already owning some of them.
Yeah.
Along the way. Javi Bulin was a key piece to the Lightning's ascension from a team that continually missed the playoffs to a team that, you know, started making the playoffs and then winning the Stanley Cup. So his impact on both the 02-03 team and the 03-04 team were, you know, the impact was very significant. And it's hard to kind of just cast that aside and say, well, he was only here for a couple of years, because he was such a big part of the team winning the Stanley Cup, which is to date their only Stanley Cup championship. So you have to put him in the mix. And kind of the similar thing with Ben Bishop. I mean, when the Lightning acquired Ben Bishop, first of all, if you recall, that trade, Bishop for Corey Conacher, and I think Eric Erlandson brought this up when they made the deal for Coleman, that, you know, at the time of the trade, Lightning fans were upset.
Yeah, yeah.
Corey Conacher had a really good rookie year with the Lightning, which was the lockout-shortened year in the 12-13 season. And Ben Bishop had not really established himself as a legit number one,
right,
you know, either in St. Louis or in Ottawa, and we know how that turned out.
And the Lightning
and so
had
Bishop
who was
a,
real quick, Dave. Who was the? I was trying to think of this. Who was the Lightning goaltender when they traded for Bishop? Lindback. Lindback.
Yeah. And the Lightning made a significant trade with Nashville to get Anders Lindback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he did not. He did not evolve into the number one.
Exactly.
The Lightning hoped he would,
mm-hmm.
but Ben Bishop did. And if we're going to track the trajectory of the Lightning from a team that, you know, was really poor defensively, good offensively, but poor defensively in the 11-12 and 12-13 seasons, and a team that had missed the playoffs for, what is it, 5 out of 6 years, and then started going on this run where they've made the playoffs every year but one in 16-17, they missed the playoffs by a point, so they were right there. And Bishop was gone at that point. But their ascension back into legitimate contender coincides with Ben Bishop's arrival. So we have to include Javi Bulin and Bishop in that conversation as well. But given Vasilevskiy's resume so far and his age, I mean, he's 25. He'll turn 26
this
year.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
He's got such a long runway in front of him in terms of, you know, his body of work that we still don't know about. It's hard to imagine that anybody is going to, you know, compare with him in terms of the Lightning's history.
Yeah.
Which again, you know, compared to the original six teams is just a snapshot. I mean, it's, you know, it's very brief. The Lightning have not had the same volume of goaltenders come through their organization as some of these other franchises, because their first year was, you know, in 1992-93. But certainly Vasi is well on his way to, you know, finishing up with every goaltending record imaginable with Tampa Bay.
So looking ahead on the schedule, I can't believe we're like in the final month and a half or so of the season, because I feel like we just got started. Maybe not for you so much, but I feel like we just got started. What teams do you expect to give the Lightning some fits or some trouble down the stretch here? If any.
You know, it's funny you ask that, CP, because I was just thinking today about the Lightning stretch run, and they are in a much different spot than they were right before Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
They played the Panthers right before Christmas. They were in sixth place in the Atlantic Division, out of the playoff, out of a playoff spot. Mm-hmm. Now, their points percentage was better than their standings position because they had games in hand, but games in hand are only helpful if you can, you know, accumulate points in those games in hand. I think at the time of that game, the Panthers had a 3-point lead on the Lightning. So if they lose that game right before Christmas to the Panthers, they're down 5 points to Florida.
Right.
And, of course, starting with that game, they, you know, won 10 in a row. Now they're on another long winning streak as we speak. So they've put themselves in a much different position, and now they're right there with Boston for not only first place in the Atlantic Division, but also potentially trying to get the President's Trophy. So what I was thinking about was the last 2 years, the Lightning have not really been in jeopardy of missing the playoffs from the standpoint they're not in the muck, right? They're not in that, like, top eight make the playoffs. They're not in that, like, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 position where a little bit of winning streak will pull you up, but God forbid you lose 3 or 4 in a row, you know, now you're down.
Mm-hmm.
And the big difference between the 17-18 season and the 18-19 season was their playoff record.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, was there any difference between where they were in 17-18 down the stretch where their playoff position was secure, and last year where they were chasing the wins record, 62 wins, which they got, but then got bounced out in the first round, as we know. And in retrospect, they said, we let some bad habits creep into our game. We didn't have enough to, we didn't have as much to play for, let's say, as Columbus, which was, you know, battling every night just to get in the playoffs. And that was a factor in that series. That was, that's coming from the players, the coaches. You know, I'm not making that up. So in 17-18, you know, they finished first, but they finished first by 1 point over Boston.
Right.
And if you look in their last 10 games in 17-18, they were just 5-4-1. So it's hard to say that, like, they were playing their best hockey down the stretch.
Mm-hmm.
But they went into the playoffs, and they got through the first two rounds, you know, in 10 games total. They won their first two rounds 4-1 and 4-1 over the Devils and the Bruins. So I think it's hard. What I'm getting at is it's hard to predict. Like, last year I remember hearing from fans, well, we don't want to play this team, and I'd rather see this team in the first round. And you just never know. I mean, you never know who you're going to get. Montreal played the Lightning pretty tough last year. I know the Lightning had great success against the Canadiens. But if you were just to base it on who played the Lightning the toughest during the regular season of Columbus, Carolina, and Montreal, and if you recall, those were the three teams that potentially were going to be the Lightning's first-round opponent, you'd probably say, well, Montreal with Carey Price, and they play the Lightning tough. Maybe we don't want to see them. Right. They got Columbus, and look what happened.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess the way I'd answer your question is we just don't know. Like, we don't know which team is going to give the Lightning trouble. And I assume you're saying heading into the playoffs, not, you know, in game 71 or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think the right way to look at it then is don't worry so much about the record. Don't worry so much about where the Lightning are going to potentially finish. First things first, just make sure you don't go into a big slump, and let's secure the playoff spot, which you need.
Right.
But more than that, let's focus on, from the player's standpoint and the coach's standpoint, playing the right way, playing the way that will breed playoff success, so that to the extent that bad habits did creep into their game toward the tail end of last year, and maybe the way they were playing was not as conducive necessarily to playoff success. Although I'm not sure that I completely agree with that, because it was basically the same team that had gone 7-3 in their previous 10 playoff series before the loss to Columbus. So nobody had any problem when they were winning 7 out of 10 series, you know, in the previous years, playing the way that they were playing. But I do think that they've had more of a commitment to team defense this year. I think that's evident if you just watch them play, how hard they're playing in front of their goalie. They're limiting scoring chances for the other team more efficiently. And I think that that will help them heading into the playoffs and in the playoffs, presumably. So let's see if they can maintain that regardless of the results, regardless of whether they finish first, whether they finish second, wherever. Get in the playoffs and try and focus on playing the right way, and then let the chips fall where they may. But I'm hesitant to kind of even to get into this notion of who do you want to play, who don't you want to play, because you just never know. And yes, matchups change. Like, the what the matchup is can maybe be a little bit more beneficial for one team, maybe a little less beneficial for another team. But at the end of the day, you know, you're going to play who you're going to play. And if you're playing well, it shouldn't matter whether you're playing kind of a heavier team or a speedier team or a team with an elite goalie that, you know, is bailing out his team in front of him, or a team that plays really well in front of an average, more average goalie. Like, they're all good if they're getting in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So just focus on your own game and make sure you're taking care of your own business, and then go for it in the playoffs, and you know, hope that the work that you've done during the regular season will bleed into the playoffs so that you are still playing at the top of your game.
We are speaking with Dave Mishkin on Game Misconduct. Yeah, and kind of to touch on that, it was we spoke with Diana Neros from the Tampa Bay Times, and it was a couple months ago, and you know, we were talking about how in October and November, like, I wasn't really sure what team I was watching, but I think to what she said back then and to what you just elaborated on there was that they were trying to eliminate those bad habits from their game that maybe they let them creep in at the end of last season, and at the beginning of the season, they're like, okay, let's play better team defense, let's clean up these little things, and now we're seeing, I feel like, the fruits of their labor, getting all that out of the way, learning how to play the right way earlier in the season, so now they're just cranking on all cylinders.
Yeah, you asked that question about Vasilevsky in the context of kind of the big picture,
mm-hmm.
but if we're going to look at Vasi's season from kind of a micro viewpoint, he himself felt that he did not have a good start to the year. He even told Joe Smith at one point that, you know, I'm a way, way average goaltender. That was his quote. And almost from the minute that he said that, he went on this incredible run, mm-hmm. starting in late December. But my point is that the difference between Vasilevsky's body of work this year as opposed to last year, particularly, is now he's kind of found his game.
Mm-hmm.
And I choose to believe that to the extent that his play dipped at the start of the year, that was a blip,
mm-hmm.
and that was the exception rather than the rule, because if you look at the body of his work over the course of his NHL career, he has been at a certain level, and that level has been exceptionally high. So when that level dips, are you going to say, well, that previous level was a fluke, or is that what we can kind of rely on? He's going to get back there, and clearly he has gotten back to that high level. But the difference between his body of work this year as opposed to last year is that he is facing far fewer scoring chances against.
Mm-hmm.
And to the extent that, you know, if you want to say he was bailing out his teammates, I mean, all goalies are going to have to make key saves. All goalies are going to have to make routine saves, because if you don't make a routine save, that can be incredibly deflating. That's a bad goal that you allow,
mm-hmm.
and you want to minimize those. And then you do want to pull a rabbit out of a hat when you can and make an incredible save on a prime scoring chance for the opposition. But you can kind of track how the Lightning are defending in front of him by the number of times that Vasilevsky has to make those oh-wow saves.
Yep.
And it's great that he can make them, but he's had to make fewer of those,
yep.
not only over the course of the season, but even within a game. And the Lightning are making the game more manageable for both him and McElhinney.
Yep.
And you look at that 10-game winning streak that the Lightning had that started with that Florida game. I mean, they had some performances in that 10-game winning streak that were like A-plus
mm-hmm.
defensive performances. And by defensive, I'm talking about forgetting the goalie for a second.
Right.
Like, they just dominated Arizona mm-hmm. in that game at Amalie Arena in January. And Arizona had come in playing very well
yeah.
at that point. And the Lightning gave them nothing. Nothing. I mean, they had nothing going. Taylor Hall had one breakaway in that game, and that was it. So that was the one save that, you know, Vasi had to make. There were other games, too. Now, Detroit's a bad team
mm-hmm.
this year. But the Lightning absolutely suffocated the Red Wings in that game in late December at Amalie Arena. The game they played in Philly, not the one at Amalie Arena, but the game in Philly that the Lightning won 1-0
mm-hmm.
was an A-plus defensive performance. They absolutely shut down the Flyers.
Yeah.
The Flyers have some really talented offensive players, to the point that Jake Voracek, after the game, said, this is a different team than the one that we've seen in years past. So it's hard to maintain that, and it's hard to just be a machine and just keep churning out these games where you're basically making virtually no mistakes. And as the Lightning kind of got into more of a comfortable playoff position, I think that, if you want to say they've exhaled, I'm not sure that's the right way to put it, that level hasn't quite been maintained.
Mm-hmm.
But even when it hasn't been maintained, they've still been really good.
Yeah.
And they are working hard to limit those grade A chances for the opposition, which is kind of going back full circle to what are they doing differently this year, maybe as opposed to last year or previous years. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest thing is they are making games more manageable for their goaltenders.
Yeah.
And not having to rely on their goaltending as much to give them key saves or put them in a position where they have to outscore their problems.
Right.
They're not really in that position this year, and they're good enough offensively that if they do hold the other team to two or less, they're going to have an excellent chance to win. I think that's been a big part of their success during this incredible stretch that they've been in.
Well, Mr. Michigan, always so much to think about. You kind of make me see the game in a different way, and it's fantastic. And we can't tell you how much we appreciate you spending some time with us this week. And everybody can follow your stories and anything that you have to say on Twitter at Dave Michigan. Once again, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, ladies. Thanks as always.
Thanks again to our guest, Dave Michigan, for joining us. We are going to take a quick break and come back with more on Game Misconduct.
Welcome back to Game Misconduct. I'm CT here with Dory.
Hello.
Don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Facebook. And we still haven't figured out Instagram, but we might do that, you know, hopefully by the end of the season.
And
but anyway,
yeah, and probably never will figure out Snapchat. So that's probably never going to happen.
No, I refuse Snapchat.
I don't get it.
Refuse it.
I don't get it. I'm sorry. I know. Maybe I'm just like showing my age. I just don't understand. My daughter's a senior in high school, and they don't even text people anymore. CT, they don't even text anymore.
They don't.
No, they snap. They snap each other. I don't get it.
That's weird.
I
prefer texting.
Yeah, me too. Anyway, now that's out of the way.
So there will never be a Game Misconduct Snapchat, in case anybody was wondering. So let's get to talking about the games that happened in Vegas and in Arizona, which I went to, and I'm never allowed to go on a road trip again.
Yeah.
Although my record on other road trips had been pretty good until this one, but I basically saw two stinkers, really, if you want to, you know, not, you know, I don't know what the word is. But
two complete defensive breakdowns.
Yeah.
I think part of the reason that the Lightnings were on that 11-game winning streak was because of the defense. They were playing just complete shutdown hockey. And in Las Vegas, it was shaky. You started seeing mm-hmm. it break down. And then in Arizona, it was just, it looked like a completely different team than the team we have been seeing since the start of the year 2020.
Yeah, and in Vegas, they were missing Braden Point, who had the flu. And I think you really saw that. And then he was back in Arizona, but then and the team played really well for the first 10 minutes, mm-hmm. and then it just all fell apart. Kind of like the Vegas game a little bit for mm-hmm. me. Like I felt really good coming into that game, and the first couple minutes were good, and then it's just a complete and total breakdown. You know, these are those ebb and flows of the seasons, as we've always talked about.
Yep.
And this just happens to be a down ebb.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And they were undefeated
unfortunately,
against
Pacific teams.
Yeah. And that's why I kind of look at it and go, they were two bad losses. I think it was obvious what it was. And they get back to not, you know, listen, these are 2-point games, right? They're not a 4-point yeah. game like they're going against Boston or Pittsburgh, you know, the Washington, any Eastern Conference team right now that's in the top 8, not named the Tampa Bay Lightning. Those are games at this point cannot lose, because you're not losing. You know, you're technically, you win 2 points, but your opponent who you're chasing in the standings is not getting 2 points. So that's why Cooper calls them 4-point games. These were not. These were against, you know, Pacific Coast teams who or Pacific Division teams that we would not be seeing. I don't think either one of them again.
I think that's it for the season.
Yeah. So I would rather it happen. And those ebbs and flows and the valleys and the mountains, I'd rather those, defensive breakdown happen against these teams than happening against Columbus or happening against, the Islanders or those, Boston's coming up. I'd rather it happen now.
Yeah. And, Eric Chernak went off, in the Arizona game. And Shattenkirk had to play more minutes and, Hedman had to play with, a different pairing.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll see Chernak back and it's not too serious. But, I really do think this team misses Ryan McDonagh.
Yeah.
They were able to keep it together for a really long time, but eventually that's going to wear and tear.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really think this team misses Ryan McDonagh and hopefully he will be back soon.
Now I want to get your
and not rushed.
Oh yeah, definitely. No. Please don't. I have no problem with people taking their time to get 100% or as close to 100% when you're at this point of the season. Because as we found out last year, and we've said it a million times, it feels like what happens at in the regular season ultimately doesn't matter. Ultimately, the goal is not to win the President's Cup. It's not to win the division. It's not to win the conference. It's to win the conference, but that's only to go on to the Stanley Cup final. And if that means that we have to go another week or so or whatever it is, I have no idea, without Ryan McDonagh or a little bit longer, but it means we're getting a healthy Ryan McDonagh without any setbacks, then I'll take it.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, he really does mean a lot to this team. And my question that I kept thinking as I'm watching Arizona that I want to ask you is, was the feel you got watching Vasilevsky in those games, did it feel like he was feeling a little less confident than normal?
I don't know if it was less confident. I feel like there were a lot of defensive breakdowns and it didn't help,
Yeah.
Like he can stop a lot, but he can't stop everything. And, I just felt like there were a lot of defensive breakdowns. I don't want to say that I felt like they hung him out to dry every once in a while,
mm-hmm.
but that they were just having defensive breakdowns
mm-hmm.
and, they could get through the middle. In Arizona, the Coyotes really took away the middle, the center of the ice and pushed the Lightning to the peripheral and the outsides. Mm-hmm. And when you can't get inside the center of the ice, you can't really get that puck on and score a whole lot.
Right.
There were a lot of odd man rushes and takeaways and turnovers in Vegas. There weren't as many in Arizona, but there were still quite a few and uncharacteristically quite a few for this team. So I think it's just one of those things where it's a nice reality check.
Yeah.
It's a good gut check. And they'll climb out of it. Like I said, ebbs and flows of the season. And if you listen to our first segment with Dave Mishkin, we recorded that before. That was recorded after the Colorado game.
Mm-hmm.
So we hadn't had those ebbs and flows yet. But skilled teams figure out ways to win. And this team is a skilled team.
Yeah.
So, and they do not want a repeat of what happened last year early in the playoffs.
Right.
So they're doing everything they can to kind of avoid that. And how can we work through these things to come out better on the other side?
Yeah, especially with the teams coming up that we're going to play this week. The Maple Leafs, I don't want to say they're a crapshoot. I don't think that's exactly a fair, statement to say. But, I don't think this team is where... I think they're, how do I say this? I think the expectations in Toronto was extraordinarily high on this team. They're not, completely out of it or in any sense of the word, but this is a team they have to beat. They have to beat the Maple Leafs. There's five games at home. And I, they have to win. It'd be nice if they won all five. But reality, you know, but the reality is if they continue to have defensive showings as they did in the latter part of the road trip, it's not going to happen. But, you know, Toronto's coming into town. Chicago, who is not a very good hockey team, is coming into town. Calgary and then Boston. And then we turn around and play Boston again. So those are the teams that I'm kind of eyeing right now. You know, the Maple Leafs have to win. The Blackhawks and the Flames, because they're Western Conference, I don't think it's as must. Of course, every game's a must, but those two I don't think are as, I don't want to say desperate, but important wins, significant wins. And then, you know, Boston, the following, and then Montreal comes in, and then they go to Boston. I mean, it's a really tough stretch coming up. So if they're going to have two really poor showings, I'll take them against the Knights and the Coyotes.
Yeah, agreed. And talking about, you know, the arenas, I'd already been to Vegas. It's still like medieval times meets a hockey game. They do a really great job with their in-arena presentation. It's entertaining. The fans are nice to opposing fans, so that's always nice. They were super nice because they were beating us. But, you know, they just do a really great job. Arizona was different. I got a little bit of Florida Panther vibes.
Oh, okay.
Well, there aren't as many butts in the seats.
Yeah.
You know, the Knights, everybody's engaged. They're still learning. A lot of them are still learning the game. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting to see that and how they present the game in Vegas. But in Arizona, they know the game. Mm-hmm. And the ones that are there that are showing up for the games are super engaged. Yeah. And so it was really kind of cool to see. And the weather's been beautiful in Arizona, so we got lucky. But, yeah, so a couple things that I want to talk about around the league before we go. The Detroit Red Wings, with their loss on Saturday, have been eliminated from the playoffs already. And it's not, you know, it was way before the trade. Well, not way before the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. So Steve Yzerman has his hands, his work cut out for him.
Ooh.
In Detroit, with them already being eliminated. Also, Alexander Ovechkin, as you probably heard, scored his 700th goal. Yay, let's move on. I'm so glad he scored it, so I don't have to keep hearing about it. But it's a huge accomplishment, yeah. But I'm happy we can move on. And then the story out of Carolina, where two goaltenders got hurt in a game, and an emergency steps in. He's a Zamboni driver, Dave Ayers. Comes in relief and gets the win. Like, that is a movie waiting to happen. It was awesome. And I just thought it was so cool.
Yeah, when I saw that story, because it was all over, of course, I'm getting notifications left and right that NHL Twitter is having a meltdown. And, you know, I see it involves a goalie, and I'm, what is going on? And to watch, you know, first of all, it's a nifty story because he was actually a Zamboni driver for the Marlies organization, which is the minor league team, I guess, affiliate for the Maple Leafs. So he actually wore, you know, a Carolina Hurricanes jersey, but his goalie mask has Toronto Maple Leafs stickers on it. But that's apparently the way it works. An emergency goalie is an emergency goalie and they're ready to play for either team. He let the first two goals in, and one of the Carolina, players said to him, "Hey, shake it off and just have fun." And he said that was the turning point for him, and he stopped the next eight. So he gets the win. And, I'm going to go ahead and retweet it from our, I don't like retweeting Carolina Hurricanes anything, but there's a really nice celebration that they showed of him coming into the locker room and Rod Brind'Amour basically keeping it really short and sweet and just saying, you know, this is a moment and thank you for the moment.
That's awesome.
Very cool.
I have chills. It could be a Disney movie tomorrow. So, all right. Well, Dory, anything else you want to add before
nope,
we go?
Nope. Just everybody just keep the faith. And this is a very good hockey team. And they're going to, I think they're going to bounce back very quickly.
Yes. Thank you so much for joining us on this edition of Game Misconduct. You can follow us in case you want to see that celebration in Carolina. It's at Game Miz with a Z Conduct on Twitter and Facebook. And we will catch you next week.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.